What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Rabbi Susan Goldberg of Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Los Angeles, discussing outreach and engaging millennial generation Jews. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I had an interesting discussion this last week about the difference between Judaism and Christianity with a congregant. She noted that in her view, the key difference between the religious traditions was that Christianity believes that faith is the most important thing of all, while Judaism believes that actions are the most important. That is, for Christians, belief is the highest principle and underlies all action, while for Jews, belief matters, but what matters much more is the way that you act. I agreed with her that Judaism, while cognizant of the importance of belief, highlights action above all. The term we use in Judaism for that preference is mitzvot, commanded acts. Mitzvot is the plural of the word mitzvah, which is often understood to mean good deeds, but that oversimplifies things. A mitzvah is a moral act, a commanded duty, if you will, that Jews are required to do. If you are an Orthodox Jew, you see the mitzvot as God's commandments, and fulfilling mitzvot is the only way for a Jew to live a truly good life. If you are a more liberal Jew in your religious preferences, a conservative or reformed Jew, you understand that mitzvot are directed moral actions, either ordained by God or determined by our tradition, and they outline the best way to live. In general, in Judaism, we judge people based not upon their beliefs, but upon their actions. Do they live ethical lives? Do they give tzedakah, charity, to restore justice to the world? Do they live good family lives? Do they participate in the synagogue and community actively and positively? Do they help other Jews and other people? Do they advocate for good causes and seek justice in the world? That's not to say that belief is absent in Judaism, or that faith isn't a powerful and important part of being Jewish. If you firmly believe, for example, in two gods, or that Jesus was the Messiah and was literally a divine God-man, you may be a very good person indeed, but you are not a Jew. But if you believe in one God, or are agnostic about belief at all, or even lean towards not believing in any standard idea of God, so long as you fulfill mitzvot and act in these Jewish ways, you will be understood to be a good Jew. This fascinates non-Jews sometimes, who wonder what purpose prayer or Jewish ritual could possibly have for an agnostic Jew. I like author Herman Wouk's answer to that. The person who rises from prayer a better person, that person's prayer has been answered. It's also clear that for so many Jews, the regular cycle of Jewish holidays, of Shabbat, the rituals, prayers, songs, and observances of our Hebrew calendar have a beautiful way of sanctifying and shaping life. It's more than a bit odd that in Reform Judaism, we often don't talk about mitzvot much, preferring to use phrases that are more global, like tikkun olam, the repair of the world. But every effort to improve the world or ourselves begins with doing individual acts, fulfilling mitzvot. When we assist another person, teach our children right from wrong through Torah, console the bereaved, honor the dead, visit the sick, work for justice in society, pray sincerely, give to charity, seek peace, or expand our personal knowledge of Judaism, we are doing mitzvot. That is the way we Jews work to repair the world, one mitzvah at a time. Are there other ways to find holiness in the world? Can you begin with a great leap of faith instead of the small practicality of daily acts? Of course. But the Jewish way has always been to commit ourselves to the regular work of mitzvot, and so find ways to remake our own character and our world. It's a good way to be, and the path that has served our people well for close to 4,000 years. In our own way, may we each continue to find and fulfill the mitzvot that give meaning and holiness to life. To play us in this morning from a beautiful CD that our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, brought back to me from Israel, here's a setting of Israeli poet Natan Yonatan's lyric Ha'ish Hahu, That Man. It's often associated with the late Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Where are there more people like that man? A man of the soil of this land, a farmer, a builder, like a weeping willow, able to withstand all that life sent his way. Ha'ish Hahu, sung by Shlomo Arzi.
איפה ישנם עוד אנשים כמו האיש ההוא אשר היה כערבות הבוכיות למרגלות ההר נולד ליד הנחל בחורף שר בין ערבות בוכיות בקיץ בין אורות ביצעי המים לחמו שילח על פני הנחל לדגה מקנה הסוף קראת לו עפיפון וכשהיה לאיש מגבעולי הערבות הבוכיות נטה סוכה מאבן המבצר האפורה בנה לו בית על מהנחל תחנה הקים זרה שדות שלח עונו על פני הים באוניות סוחר אך יש אשר יניח כלי מלאכתו ויהיה פתאום לאיש אחר איפה ישנם עוד אנשים כמו האיש ההוא אשר היה כערבות הבוכיות איפה ישנם עוד אנשים כמו האיש ההוא אשר היה כערבות הבוכיות
That was Ha'ish Hahu by Natan Yonatan. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Rabbi Susan Goldberg, has had an unusual and interesting path to her current work at a historic established synagogue doing outreach and engagement with unconnected and unaffiliated Jews, particularly millennials. Find out about her and her work when we come back soon on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K-8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Susan Goldberg is a rabbi at Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Los Angeles, who is active and perhaps doing some of the most interesting work in the field now, doing outreach, community engagement, and doing so in a different and fresh way. She came there in 2013, fourth generation Angeleno, that means, like me, someone from Los Angeles, is focused on developing LA's East Side Jewish community and helping bring them into a more active engagement with Judaism and with her synagogue indeed. She has also a very interesting background, ordained at the Academy for Jewish Religion. Prior to that, she was a dancer. And she serves as well as a rabbinic consultant for the groundbreaking and award-winning TV program Transparent. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, simple question. What's different about your rabbinate?
Oh, what's different about it? I mean, I think that one of the things that's central to my rabbinate that probably makes it different is I really do see myself as an outreach rabbi. And I think that that's more common in certain Orthodox worlds of Judaism and less so in other worlds. And it is my focus to enliven Judaism wherever I can, you know, so if that means sitting in a cafe and studying Torah or taking a walk around the reservoir and talking about life and spiritual transitions, or if it's, you know, wherever folks are to meet people where they are and through dialogue and relationship and Torah to bring people more deeply into Jewish life, but also that it's a dynamic conversation, so also about making Jewish life more present and more expansive inside of our institutions and out in the world.
So more expansive and, in a funny way, less expensive.
yes.
The goal. We used to say years ago that it was the field was sort of Hatch'em, Match'em, and Dispatch'em. That is, it was life cycle events and festivals. That's not really the way congregational Judaism works today, is it?
Well, I don't know that it ever was its intention, right? I mean, I think shuls, synagogues, are communities where people grow and live and come for healing and come for connection. And somewhere along the way, there did get into this transactional experience, which is what I think that you're alluding to, that I pay this fee so that you'll be here for these specific events, and it's not about a community and a place to come and be and to grow with. And I think that in some ways, this, you know, nothing is ever new in Chadash.
In Chadash Tachar HaShemesh, right.
Yeah, and so I think that this idea of saying, you know, that's why when people say, oh, what you're doing is so innovative, I say, oh, really? I don't think so. I think it's really what a community is, a spiritual community is, a community of people growing and learning together and responsive to each other. But it is a shift away from, I think, this this model that feels too much like a gym, right? Or I pay you this money for a fee for service, really, rather than, you know, we make contributions to the community so that the community can maintain, but it's clear what that's about. It's not about a fee for a particular service that I need in my life, in which it all becomes very separate. This is about building community and being there for each other and being on a spiritual journey. I think that's the other piece, that when we just talk about specific life cycle events, it doesn't talk about what happens in between those, which really is more of our lives, right? What is the whole journey of our lives? And I think that a lot of people are spiritual seekers, are looking for meaning and making meaning of our lives, making our lives better.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Susan Goldberg about the way communities are now, how they've changed, what the generational changes mean when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio 18 at Gmail, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We have less than 9 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our election year feature, the 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. The Donald Trump Express sailed through Nevada and the Republican field's down from its high of 18 candidates to just 5. Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, and Carson. Sounds like a law firm. While Jews tend to register Democratic by a margin of about 2-1 and vote for president that way too, it isn't clear which presidential candidates on either side are really attracting the Jewish vote. In certain key primary states, that Jewish vote might prove critical. Florida, Ohio, and California come to mind. Interestingly, the Jewish press here in America has been fairly quiet about Trump's apparent ascent. Not so the paper of record for the left of Israel, Haaretz. In the latest issue, there are not one, not two, but 3 strongly anti-Trump guest articles arguing that Donald Trump would be bad for the Jews, bad for Israel, and morally bad for the world. While many of us might agree, it remains to be seen what influence an Israeli newspaper will have on the American presidential race. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been talking about some of the great Eidot HaMizrach, the Jewish communities of the diaspora, which date their history back to the time of the destruction of the First Temple. Some of those communities range from India to Yemen to Syria, which we spoke about, and Egypt, which has always played an important role in Jewish history from the time of Moses, really all the way back to the time of Abraham. And then great Jewish communities existed in the diaspora there.
Right. Well, the first of those communities, historically speaking, was the community of Alexandria, which was obviously founded by Alexander the Great, a huge center of commerce, trade, and learning,
especially learning,
under the Greeks. There was the famous Library of Alexandria, which was one of the wonders of the ancient world, really.
Burned in the time of Julius Caesar.
Right. And there was a large, rich, and very important Jewish community, in some ways very similar to the Jewish community in New York City today. It represented the Jews of the diaspora to the entire Greek-speaking world. You know, Alexandria was the capital of several Greek dynasties. It was probably the most important port in the Eastern Mediterranean. And Cairo was nothing. I mean, Cairo didn't exist at all until the 9th century AD, or 8th maybe. But the Jewish community of Alexandria was the first Jewish community to collect funds to publish a translation into a language other than Hebrew of what some people call the Hebrew Bible, we call the Tanakh. And that translation, which was into Greek, so that Greeks could actually read it.
Well, so Greek-speaking Jews who no longer read or spoke Hebrew.
Right. Was called the Septuagint. Right. But it was really done as a kind of Madison Avenue advertising campaign, because there was a lot of anti-Jewish literature generated by both Egyptians and Greeks in Alexandria, most of which was based on total ignorance of Jewish scriptures. It was based on hearsay. So Jews thought, optimistically and wrongly as it turned out, that if they actually showed what their scriptures were, they could counter some of these prejudices against them. And interestingly, the Septuagint included 15 books which were later excluded from the Hebrew Bible.
From the canon of the Bible. Right,
the Apocrypha, which was maintained somehow by the Christians, not quite as the Old Testament, not quite as the New Testament, but as somehow sacred scriptures, which were in the Septuagint, but shortly thereafter were excluded by authorities in Israel. In any case, the community of Alexandria was important until the first major pogrom early in the 4th century, which basically destroyed it entirely, burned down the synagogues, chased out the Jews. And although there were Jewish and Christian settlers in Alexandria later in history than that, it never regained its place of primordial importance in the Jewish diaspora. And that was eventually taken over, of course, by Cairo, which had a tremendously important Jewish community and had the famous Geniza with so many buried books and documents that scholars are still working on this as a treasure trove of primary source material.
Right, 120 or 30 years after its discovery. That I actually have been in that synagogue, of course, and then I also had the chance to lead a prayer service in what was then the only consistently active synagogue in Cairo. I don't think it's still active now. Either the older Jews passed away or they moved to Israel. But it was a great Jewish community in Egypt, and there are still people who remember the Alexandria Jewish community and the remarkable learning and culture that it created. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivina and Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center, just back from Israel. Abrucha haba'a, welcome.
Toda, it's good to be back.
So from your latest trip home back to Israel, leading an interesting and I think diverse group, what are your first insights, particularly about perceptions, the way people think about Israel and then they experience it?
It's amazing because it's really a simple insight. It's, again, like the only very close example I have, that when you have like just the furniture or old furniture in your house and you never pay attention to it, you take it for granted. And then a neighbor comes and says, whoa, where you get your furniture? I said, no, I don't know. It was here forever. I don't know. From grandma. And then like the same, like Israel, it's the land that I was born in. My mother came to. So I wasn't able even to appreciate that I live in the midst of the center of, you know, almost every discussion. So to see Israel through other people, and we had like Christian and Jewish and, you know, all kind, 44 people. So I had lots of a different discussion and experience and moving moment. And to see that I have like my Israel, which is very ordinary, you know, my Israel, my land, you know, my home. And for other people, it's like the Holy Land. It's the land of the Bible, the land of, you know, historic moments. So for me, like, you know, I think I learned to appreciate more my
your
country.
Own homeland.
For sure. But it was much deep, but we need more than 3 minutes to talk about it.
Well, we can talk about it next week, too. I was thinking that, you know, for Americans, most of the time when I talk about Israel to Americans, the first thing they think about is the conflict with the Palestinians. And that does certainly make the news in Israel, but it's certainly not most of the news.
Oh, my God. That's one of the really things that, you know, people on the trip were so surprised that it's not, you know, that's the only thing, the government, the people, the sidewalk, the side. Not, it's not, well, it will be a disaster if it will be the only thing that we will
talk about, right?
Deal with. Sure. We have like just ordinary, simple shtuyot life. Like we have like the very simple thing to deal with. So the majority of the chadashot, which is the news, and the majority of the newspaper and the whatever talk shows, it's not about the conflict. It's about, you know, funny thing, regular thing, like in America.
Like in America, movies,
Bidiuk.
You know,
I think
what,
we are
sports.
More on the news in America. The conflict is more on the news in America than in Israel.
That's
actually
entirely
that sure.
possible. We will talk more about your trip and observations about Israel next week. Thanks so much, Oshra.
Toda rabbi.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the head of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Appreciation is one of the things we try to instill in our children.
Yes.
We try to teach it, and well, we don't always succeed. What's the best way to show appreciation?
Oh, well, that is such an important question, because life is too short not to express our gratitude and to appreciate all the good things that we have. So you can express appreciation in a million different kinds of ways. A little email, a nice note, even a friendly smile and a hello each day says, we appreciate you.
And bringing like a hamantash in early for
Purim. A hamantash, yeah, you bet. And, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, because there are two events happening at THA this week I'd really love to share with our listeners. The first of those is coming up Tuesday night, March 1st. We're having a wine and paint night. It's an adult-only event.
You got to make sure which one you drink and which one you work with.
Right. The idea is that all proceeds of this event will go straight towards teachers at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Starts at 6:30, should be a lot of fun. We have a phenomenal art teacher, Amy Poses, and she's teaming up with our PTSO. Amy will teach you to paint like a pro, and you'll walk out of there with a lovely product which you would be proud to hang on your wall. We did a test run with teachers a couple weeks ago, and it was really a lot of fun.
How lovely. And that goes to support teachers, to show appreciation for teachers.
You bet. And having a specific event is a key way to show appreciation. So that one is on Tuesday, March 1st at 6:30 p.m. at THA. Please call the office if you're interested in attending.
And you also want to show appreciation to those people that support you, right?
Absolutely. And a key support at THA and at ANCHI for their kindergarten program is through JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. So everybody who has made a contribution to JETCO this past year is invited to join us at THA. This event is coming up on Thursday, March 6th, and it begins at 1:30. We'll have an opportunity to tour classrooms and listen to the THA choir sing. So all of our JETCO contributors are invited to join us this coming up Thursday, March 6th at 1:30.
And the truth is, you can contribute to JETCO right up until April 15th, unless
Absolutely.
I'm mistaken.
Yeah, you can actually contribute to JETCO year-round, 12 months of the year, any time of day, because you can go to www.jetco and make a contribution right there online from home.
Yeah, I think it's jetco.org. Is that the rest
jetco.org.
Of it?
Jetco.org.
You very got important it. To get that right, you know. Well, I certainly appreciate you and your contributions to the Two Jewish Radio Show on the theme of appreciation.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here. And if you'd like to call the school for further information, our number is 529-3888.
That's 520-529-3888. Thanks, John. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Rabbi.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is going May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you want to come on this fabulous journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOOJewishRadio18, or call 327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Little Yossi and his family were having dinner at his Bubby's house. When everybody was seated, the food came out. As soon as Yossi got his plate, he started eating from it right away. "Yossi, wait until we say Hamotzi, our prayer," said his father. "I don't have to," Yossi replied. "Of course you have to," said his mother. "We always say the prayer before eating at our house." "Yes, but that's our house," Yossi said. "This is Bubby's house, and she knows how to cook." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish Just for You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Vayakhel deals with the question of the creation of the tabernacle in the wilderness, the consecration of the first central worship sanctuary for the people of Israel. Vayakhel et ha'am, the text reads, Moses assembled the people, called them together, and asked them on God's behalf to bring forward the finest objects they possessed to help create the tabernacle in which the whole people could worship God in holiness. And the people gave of the best they had. Gold and silver, precious stones and materials used to create a beautiful sanctuary, one they could be proud of, one they believed would lend itself to the perpetuation of beauty and sanctity. Then Moses invited those artisans, wise in the ways of working with beautiful items, to come forward and create a structure that embodied what God saw as appropriate for a sanctuary. In particular, Moses explained that God has called by name a man named Bezalel from the tribe of Judah, whom God filled with the Spirit of the Lord, wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and all manner of skilled workmanship. He has the wisdom of the heart, that he might teach and work with every wise-hearted person in this sacred work. When the work was complete, they had created a tabernacle that God immediately filled with the divine presence, a place of profound sacredness for our ancestors. I love that phrase for those skilled in the work of the hands, wise-hearted men and women who create beauty and elegance to serve God in this world. Each of us has different skills. Some can sing, some dance, some speak eloquently. and some of us create works of art and practical beauty with our own hands. Each of us can contribute to the creation of holiness in this world by applying our skills to holy work. And when we do, we too have the potential to bring God's presence into our midst, into our ordinary, practical world, and make it sacred. May we each use our own skills this week to make our lives and our world a little more holy. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Susan Goldberg, will explore and explain the ways in which she involves and engages millennial generation Jews in her synagogue and in Jewish life. Find out how she does it when we return shortly on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
An ultra-Orthodox Haredi lawmaker in Israel made ugly headlines when he publicly compared the Reform movement to a mentally ill person. Israel Eichler of the United Torah Judaism Party, a member of Knesset, made his remarks last week in the lead-up to a parliamentary debate on Israel's Supreme Court decision that non-Orthodox converts can immerse in a public mikveh. Not every mentally ill person can come to the operating room and decide the rules of medicine and force the hospital to have an operation by whatever way works, Eichler said. The High Court can't force a hospital to allow the court's surgeons and the court's medicines into the operating room. It is intolerable that the directors of mikvahs, ritual baths, will have to allow organizers of Reform religion-changing ceremonies into a mikveh. Eichler also denied the authority of the Supreme Court of Israel. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court ruled that mikvahs in Israel must open to non-Orthodox conversions. Previously, Israeli mikvahs have denied access for conversion immersions to Reform and conservative converts. Israel's mikvahs are run by Israel's Religious Services Ministry, which operates in lockstep with the Orthodox-dominated Rabbanut, the chief rabbinate. Rabbi Rick Jacobs, president of the Union for Reform Judaism, a past guest of Two Jewish, called Eichler's remarks another example of the extreme intolerance of the ultra-Orthodox religious establishment. Clearly, they feel the seismic shift in their decades-old monopoly on Judaism in Israel. Their stranglehold on Judaism is being loosened. Their response is desperate and pathetic. It's hard to imagine what twisted Torah M.K. Eichler studies when he characterizes the largest movement in Jewish life as mentally ill. Our Torah teaches us the values of pluralism and tolerance. It teaches us not to use phrases like mentally ill as an epithet. In happier news, Yisrael Kristal of Haifa, age 112, may now be the oldest living man in the world after an almost 113-year-old Japanese man died last week. When his family told Kristal he was up for the honor, he responded in Yiddish, "The joy of my old age." His grandson, Oren, received an email last week from the Gerontology Research Group, an international body that verifies and tracks people who are at least 110, and sends its list to the Guinness World Records organization. The email told him that a Japanese man died 2 months short of his 113th birthday last week, and that Kristal was therefore a candidate for the title of the world's oldest man. Kristal turned 112 on September 15th. According to the organization, there is no living man who can document that he's older than Kristal, but there's a bureaucratic hurdle before he will be officially certified as the oldest living man. They better hurry. There seem to have been no birth certificates issued in Poland when he was born in 1903 in the town of Zarnow. Researchers are going through archives to try to further confirm his incredible age. Kristal said he started to learn in a local cheder at age 3. At 4, he learned Bible, and at 6, Mishnah. "My father woke me up at 5 in the morning to teach me. He said I didn't want to get up that early, but I had to. I couldn't say no." When World War I broke out in 1914, he personally saw Emperor Franz Joseph. In 1920, at the age of 17, he moved to Lodz, Poland, to work in the family confections business. He made all kinds of sweets. It was hard work. He continued to make sweets in the Jewish ghetto of Lodz when it was established in 1940. 4 years later, he was sent to Auschwitz, where he lost his wife and barely survived himself. Kristal moved to Haifa in 1950 with his second wife and their son, and he continued to make confections, candies, chocolate bottles filled with liqueur and wrapped in foil, carob jelly, candied orange peels. His family does not like to state the number of his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren for fear of the evil eye. Asked his response to being named the world's oldest man at 112, Kristal said, "Big deal." And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Rabbi Susan Goldberg, came to Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Los Angeles, kind of a historic congregation. Of course, in California, history doesn't go back so far, but still a very important synagogue. She served as a kind of East Side rabbi, helped revive a congregation there, and did a variety of community outreach-oriented work, and has now been in this role, kind of doing the same thing in a sponsored way in a synagogue community, a larger synagogue community. What everybody thinks that millennials are different, and that people who've come of age in this in the 2000s don't join because they're supposed to, don't do things the way their parents and grandparents did. But isn't every generation different?
Absolutely. I think that that's true. And I also want to be clear that one of the benefits of community is that they are multi-generational. So I do have a lot of young people who are coming and being part of what I'm doing. But I also have folks of a lot of different ages, certainly baby boomers or spiritual seekers. And so I'm always mindful when things that are new are said to be only for young people. That is true, that there is a difference in what people are asking for now. But I think your larger point really speaks to it. I sat down and had a one-on-one. I do a lot of cups of tea and breakfasts and lunches with folks to really just hear what people are wanting, and to not just listen without doing, but to listen in order to really think about how to shape the community in ways that work for people. So I was having one of these cups of tea, and it was speaking to a millennial, someone in her early 20s, and she was sharing that she is really seeking a community, and she wanted to start doing Shabbat dinners with her friends, and she wanted to really figure out how Judaism and ritual and study and community could be a deeper part of her life. So we were sharing together, and she said all the things that she was wanting, all those things I just listed. And then she said, you know, so what I'm looking for is really different than what my grandfather was looking for. And I paused and I said, well, actually, you know, I think all the things that you listed, you know, study and community and spiritual connection and growth, like those were the things that your grandfather was also looking for. But how he went about getting it was different. Maybe had a different sound and a look to it. But at the core, these are the things that all of us seek. And so I think you're right in saying that there are themes that every generation says we want things to be different, but at the core we're all looking for similar things, just maybe being given and experienced in new ways.
You know, what you do, which is what really all rabbis do, but maybe you do it in different settings. When I don't know how many times someone said, oh, gosh, Rabbi, you know, bump into you in the supermarket or you see them at a restaurant and you engage in a conversation. I should come see you. Sure you should. Or why don't we have lunch? It becomes part of the way that you do it. The difference is you're supposed to be doing that.
Right. Right. So for me, that's really at the center of what I do, is connecting and listening. Because I think that when it's, oh, sure, Rabbi, I should come see you, and then we all know, like, people get busy, they don't follow up. But really, it's through relationships, and not just with me either. I mean, I think the other thing is that people are building relationships and community. So in everything we do, we think it's just as important, you know, right, that we have the potluck beforehand and the drinks and dessert after, and after we do either learning or services or all of those things, that the time of relationship building is really, really important, is not a side benefit, but is actually at the heart of building community and of what we do. And the other piece that I also want to say that's really important in the work that I'm doing is music. I think that music...
See, I knew there was a reason I liked you.
And I think also it's one of the things that people would say would be, oh, yeah, sure, that's sort of on the side, right? Sure, if you have nice music, that's a plus. To me, it's not a plus. It's central to what it is. And really in the formation of what we're doing here, and we call the community that we're doing outreach within the community, we're calling it Nefesh, which means soul. And it is... central to all of it is the collaboration with the musicians, who are really beautifully skilled, I mean beautifully talented musicians, who also have a real clear connection to the tradition, and their own spiritual practice has grown from the process of being a part of this and a part of helping to move people more deeply into prayer and into ritual. So I would say relationship building and music. And then the third piece I would say is meaningful teachings. I think that in the past people have felt that, you know, I've gone to lots of services and it's like very short, okay, here's just like almost apologetic. I know you're kind of in a hurry, so let's just do a quick little talk and now it'll be over, right? I really don't think that's what people are seeking. I think when they're coming to study or to a service, that we're really looking for something that can help them right now, tomorrow, tonight, in a conversation they're having. Meaningful learning from the tradition that plays a part in their lives and in their own journeys.
All right, so I'm from Los Angeles, as you are. I have to ask, you know, as a rabbi, when you're in Los Angeles, you have to get involved with show business in some way or another. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience of working on one of the most Jewish shows I've ever seen, Transparent?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Very happy about that. Yeah, that was just a very organic process. It wasn't, it really just happened because Jill Soloway, for whom she's the creator, writer-creator of this show, is a friend, and I'm her rabbi, and other writers on the show as well. And so we were just having lots of conversations all along the way. And at some point, I was speaking with one of the writers, who's actually Jill's sister, Faith Soloway, and you know, shaping that particular episode. And then from something I said, she got the title. You know, this whole process was happening. She said, you know, there's a role for what you do with us in all these conversations and the teachings around Judaism that is helping us to think about the show in these ways. It's called being a consultant. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it was sort of like that. It wasn't It wasn't like, we are going to now hire a consultant. It really came from an organic process of being very engaged in their lives and then in the creative work of making a really, this, you know, show is such, has such a meaningful contribution to Jewish life and to obviously also to the transgender community here and all over the world. And that's an issue that's really close to my heart and something that I'm really proud to be a part of. So it was an organic process and continues to be. You know, I sit and I have the great pleasure of studying Torah. Each time we've studied a different, there's been a different theme that we've thought of for each season, and then incorporate that with all the characters, and then working specifically on the rabbi character and having her shadow me and sit with me and learn with me. So it's just been really a beautiful process.
I'm going to ask about it earlier, probably doing this interview backwards. You started out as a dancer. Tell us about, you told a great story. I heard you tell a great story about connecting with your Judaism when you were doing some dance in the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So as a dancer, I left home at 18 to enter conservatory, and then I began dancing professionally and travel to lots of places in the world. And part of that journey for me was seeking out synagogues in Argentina, and I was in Buenos Aires, I was in Rotterdam, in Holland, I was in, you know, New York and San Francisco and Berkeley and Salt Lake City and all the big places for the arts in the United States. And I was in Berkeley, and I was literally in a dance studio rehearsing, and the rehearsal ended, and I heard Hebrew chanting happening in a studio right next door. And I thought, gosh, that's Hebrew chanting. And I wandered in, and I was like, what is happening here? And it's where Chochmat Halev started, in this dance studio in Berkeley. And they were doing a weekly meditation, Jewish meditation and chanting. And I started going every week. And it really played a big role for me in deepening. And really, I had said, use that word expanding that you had caught on to earlier, really expanding what my experience was of the Jewish tradition. And I'm very grateful for that, and certainly felt like that was, I was definitely guided there. And that journey of discovery and coming into Judaism in a different pathway through being an artist and a spiritual seeker, I think is really at the center of what I do now as a rabbi, and has really shaped what the rabbinate is for me.
I want to thank Rabbi Susan Goldberg for a great visit and expanding Judaism, doing outreach, connecting with Jews in a variety of settings and people that are interested in Judaism. Where can people go to find out more about you and about your work?
Yes, yeah, so they can come to the Wilshire Boulevard Temple webpage. It's wbtla.org. And there also, more specifically, they'll find out information about Nefesh. And for folks who are Facebook users, we have a Nefesh Facebook page that is active and we use quite a bit. And we can direct people there as well.
Thank you.
And Nefesh is N-E-F. E-S-H.
Or Nun Fei Shin, if you want to, you know, do it.
That too. Although if you put that into Facebook,
you won't
get the American version,
far.
It's hard.
Or you'll end up on some Israeli Facebook page, which wouldn't be so bad. But
not so bad.
Thanks again, and we look forward
Thank
to talking to you again soon, Susan.
Likewise.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Fox News journalist David Gregory, former host of Meet the Press, discussing his book, How's Your Faith? Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from Natan Yonatan's poem, Chofim. Shores sometimes yearn for the river. Give me the strength to open my heart again. to accept, not to run away, not to fear, to believe and always be close to the hope, as sung by the late Arik Einstein. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov and a week, we pray, of peace.
Amim gaaguin lenachal Ra'iti pa'am chof shenachal azavo Im lev shavur shel chol va'eben Ve'ha'adam ve'ha'adam Ulif'amim gam ken yachol lehisha'er Natu shuv li kochot Mamash kmo chof גם הצדפים כמו החופים כמו הרוח גם הצדפים הם לפעמים געגועים לבית שתמיד אהבו אשר היה ורק היה שר לבדו שם את שירו כך בין צדפי ריבו של האדם שרים לו נעורה גם הצדפים חופים הם לפעמים געגועים לנער